Welcome on a bumpy choo-choo train.
It's a choo-choo train, all right, Coltrane too. That's club music guru Mop Mop with Locomotive. It's from his 2008 album, Kiss of Kali. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. You know the deal. The idea is that this being a bizarre week, you surely have opinions about it and about other things. And this is our free form forum for the exchange of information, opinions, and ideas. You get to select your topic, and we expect that you have an opinion about it, something that you are emphatic about, and you bravely present your thoughts. Others may react to it, but that's the whole idea. No preset conditions here, except of course we're very nice people. We have manners and we like each other. So it's in that spirit that we talk. I just wanted to start out, if I may, although I try never to do this, but I didn't get a chance to let you hear how Betsy DeVos was greeted at Bethune-Cookman College when she got there. You know, there was a major, major problem. There was a great protest about it because people said that they didn't select her, they didn't invite her, but an underhanded kind of secret, semi-secretive invitation was issued to her, and the students, the graduates, felt that it was disrespectful to the legacy of Bethune-Cookman, and they just didn't want to have it. They didn't want to have her there. On the other hand, as you will hear, the president of the college decided to kind of issue a threat in the middle of the whole thing. The students stood up, many of them turned their backs, but there was a lot of noise. I mean, a lot of noise, both inside and outside of the ceremony. As she came in, she was greeted by a huge crowd of community people, and it was a really interesting thing to see. It was not an all-black thing. It was just that people were so outraged about this particular Secretary of Education being permitted through the machinations we still don't know to come to the campus on the occasion of a commencement, to presume that, you know, she was more important than the graduates. who certainly did not select her to speak. So there was an interesting showdown, a boo down, and I thought you should hear it just to let you know that people are taking things seriously and they are getting involved. They are trying in their own ways to express an opinion and in response to what they consider an insult to the community. Here we go.
Dr. Jackson, Board of Trustees, thank you so very, very much for this great honor and privilege.
How about that? That was the college president that you heard. The male voice belonged to Edison Jackson, the president of Bethune-Cookman University. But you heard just the same that his threat that if you continue with this behavior, your degrees will be mailed to you. And they said, all right, ooh, we're so scared. And they continued to press the point that he was one of the key people in this debacle because he basically arranged for Betsy DeVos to come to the university on the occasion of their commencement. They had nothing to say about that, and they didn't know until pretty late in the game. And the idea was that their commencement should have reflected their views, and their view was that she was not to come to the campus. And, you know, you heard them talking like they're talking to little children. These are grown folk, you know. And they stood up for the honor of their school and the honor of their founder. And I say, great job. You did a great job. And of course, you know that we have a part two coming up in Brooklyn, New York, with Hillary Clinton being invited in the same manner, quite secretly, to the campus of Medgar Evers College so that she can deliver the commencement speech. And she will also receive an honorary doctorate. Well, this has just gone crazy. And people are saying, under no circumstances do we want her to come here. And even if she does, we're going to make it plain that we do not want her to come here. And this is in respect to Clinton's specious record within the African American community, and especially the Haitian community, where, of course, Haitians still are demanding an accounting for the billions of dollars that's just disappeared, plus other atrocities committed both by Bill and Hillary Clinton in Haiti. So I thought I would, you know, this isn't television, so you couldn't see it, but you certainly can hear it, and you can hear that this was not a wonderful, wonderful embrace of Betsy DeVos and the Trump administration as regards their attitudes toward education. All right. So we open the phone lines, as usual, at 888-874-4888, and we get started with Steve from New York City. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Therese. How are you feeling?
I'm hanging in. How about you?
I'm feeling okay. I listened to the show yesterday with a lot of attention. I've been following Charles Ortel on your show since he's been starting to come and speaking. I commend you for having him on. I don't see this information any place else, and it's been a revelation to me. However, I have a couple of questions, things that I didn't understand. I took notes during yesterday's show, and I just had a couple of questions that are not clear, things are not clear to me. I don't really understand why Comey reopened the email case with Hillary Clinton at the last minute, if he was indeed a pawn of the Clintons. That's my first question. Maybe you can answer for me.
Well, I don't think this was a last-minute thing. We don't know that to be true. It might have been something that began quite a while ago, but, of course, Donald Trump would prefer to think that everything is about him. And the insistence that he dominate everybody's attention includes stomping out other information about other people that are might be important. And this is one of these things. What exactly do you understand? And when I say you, what exactly do we understand to be the scope of the investigation with Hillary Clinton? We don't know. We know what they say, that it involves the email issue, but is that all? And that's why we talk with Charles about this. He's been studying the Clinton Foundation for 2.5 years, practically, and that's all he's been doing. And the more you study the Clintons, the more you see, my God, it's a labyrinth. There's so many possible investigations that could have been ongoing, that still could be ongoing, outside of the email issue. So we don't know what the full scope of Comey's investigation is. We really don't know. We know what is said, and it's one-dimensional. It's about the email scandal. But I believe that there are far more investigations that are ongoing or should be ongoing, and maybe they're studying to find out, because these things happen when somebody is a probable target for prosecution. You study the full scope of things in order to figure out which is your best case, which is your, you know, the best shot. So that involves a whole bunch of a pre-investigation, if you will, to find out, to distill out of all of that information, what is the most success that you, what case would you have the most success?
Yeah, but I still don't understand why, right before the election, if he is indeed protecting the Clintons, would he bring up the email scandal again and say he's reopening the case? That is, with the things with Huma, Aberdeen, and, Wiener.
Well, I find the whole, the way he handled the case so far is ridiculous. I find it ridiculous. These things are secret. You know, you don't come out to the public and say, well, I'm investigating Hillary Clinton. That is just so plain, just plainly stupid to do.
Especially, I agree, but why do you think he did it? I want your opinion.
He did it, I think, because there is a subtext here about the power struggle between Comey and Trump. And I think at that time, Comey had gotten some signals because Trump was very heavy on this lock her up thing. And right. I think Comey wanted the public to know that he wasn't ignoring this case, that he was, there was some kind of movement on the case, and that he was heading up that movement on the case, if only to, again, you know, it's like a tennis match, to lob the ball on the other side of the net, to give Trump, put Trump in the reacting position, and to send a signal, hey, I'm on your side. I'm trying to get at the person that you don't like, and I'm trying to fulfill your campaign promise to, quote, lock her up. If only just to keep
the conversation going. So he has his own agenda, Comey.
I'm sorry?
So you think Comey has his own agenda, and that was a motivation for doing this? Yeah, okay, good. That's good.
Plus, you know...
And that's why you think he fired Comey at this point, as he chose to do so?
I'm sorry?
And then why do you feel that... Trump picked this time, you know, 2 days ago to fire Comey.
We don't know. You know, here's the thing. We will never know. Because I take the position that, you know, you can't trust what an FBI, the director says. You can't trust what Trump says. You just have to the best of your ability, make sense of the signals that are being sent out. And it's a large part of it is speculation, because we have no evidence of anything. And we should take the position automatically, because that's what history dictates, that we'll believe it when we see it. Until then, you know, I'm not vouching for anything that either of them says.
Gotcha. Okay. That's great. Keep up the great work, and I will keep on listening. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve, for calling in today. Dwight from Newark. You're on the air. Hello, Dwight. Okay, we lost Dwight. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Utrecht.
Hey, wonderful Harvey. What's going on?
Well, I just want to say may good health and happiness surround you and your vast audience.
Thank you so much. That's a very kind thought. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, and you're great. We love you. So I have some good news today. With the coming of robots, artificial intelligence, and 3D printers, that'll take a whole lot of mundane jobs. There's a new economic picture coming up. Canada is launching an experiment that will give 4,000 people free money until 2020. And it's called the Ontario Basic Income Pilot, which is expected to begin later in the spring, this spring, and last for 3 years. And people get a monthly check to cover their living expenses, such as food, transportation, clothing, and utilities, with no questions asked. Then the total of 4,000 people will be receiving additional income based on their current salary. A person is expected in this experiment can receive up to $17,000 a year. And the pilot is to reassure people that their government supports them. And a study published in late 2016 found that people who received a basic income use less drugs and alcohol, lower income people didn't receive the supplemental income. And it's interesting that in America, Nixon was the first one to call for a national guaranteed income. But at that time, it wasn't the right time. And I think it's wrong and unhealthy that so many of America's wealthy people control 1% controlled by 1% of the population. They control most of the wealth, and it's time to share America's wealth with people from especially in the current industrial revolution, again towards robots, artificial intelligence, 3D printers, and that's the good news, is that the experiment is on for a national basic income.
When does it end, or is there an end to it as an
well,
experiment?
It goes until 2020, and it'll start now. And so they're going to see, you know, because, you know, people think that, well, if people are given money, they'll become lazy, they'll just sit at home. But that's not true. That's not, you know, a lot of jobs are very, very mundane, and I think people have a lot of capacity toward toward creating things. You know, they can go into the arts, they can go into science. We're on the edge of space. I think mothers who are at home with their children could be paid, essentially, for raising their children, not have to go to McDonald's to flip burgers or some other mundane, silly thing. And that's why we created robots and artificial intelligence, to free us up from things that are repetitive and just sort of waste our time when machines can do it better. So this is actually an expansion of our consciousness, of our intellectual capability, and a harbinger of a better future for all of us, and so that all of the wealth doesn't fall into the hands of a few who control us all, while we are faced with draconian measures and unemployment, which will give rise to more and more of a police state. You know, when people don't have money, they will turn to crime if they don't have money for food. And that gives rise to more industrial prisons. And it's a whole, that's the wrong path to go. So by distributing more of the national wealth to American people of every economic level, mostly the low income, that will create a more secure environment. It'll reduce the amount of crime, and as I said, the amount of drugs, bad drugs, and alcohol, and child abuse, and all these things will diminish with the oncoming of a basic national income. And I think that it's a great idea to share the wealth.
Okay. Well, let's hear what people think about your great idea. Thank you, Harvey. Great to hear from you. Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Patrice.
Hello, Khalil. Good afternoon to you.
It's a pleasure to hear your voice, and I hope you are feeling as strong as you sound. And I usually don't bring it up, but I can't help myself today.
Thank you. I'm trying to remain strong myself, too, so it might be working.
It sounds like it, and I hear other people comment, so it must be working. First, I want to say I have connections with Bethune-Cookman in Daytona Beach, and I can imagine that Mary McLeod Bethune is really pleased with the students as opposed to her administrators at this point. So that was a ridiculous statement that I heard. That was just out of order. So I just wanted to start with that. But, you know, I think that it's time for us to say that in terms of what this administration, the MILF in charge, the mentally ill fascist, the people that he's appointed, namely Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions, you know, people don't name themselves. However, his name, he's living up to his name, which has been passed down for three or four generations, going back to the Civil War. So it appears that he's adopted the mores of his ancestors, which is highly unacceptable to most Americans, I would think. And it's a real problem. You know, it's unacceptable behavior. And not only that, he lied in his Senate confirmation hearings. Then he already said that he would dissolve these decrees and agreements with local and state law enforcement agencies that have been having various difficulties, when this is the exact time when we should be bolstering from the federal government. Because what if during the civil rights movement that happened? If the federal government, if Bobby Kennedy said, you know, we're not going to get involved, that's not our place. You know, that goes back to the old states' rights thing. So the thing is, he was appointed by someone who's incompetent and who looks like he's packing his bags, or someone's packing his bags for him. He's not going to last much longer, I don't think. The fascist in charge is not going to last much longer. Did you want to say something?
But don't you see Sessions as a perfect fit with the Trump administration? You know, the general mindset, the general ideology of the people so far appointed, that they seem to reflect Donald Trump's views on just about everything, and especially in the areas in which they have been appointed. Betsy DeVos, for example. No experience whatsoever in education, in which case she resembles Obama's appointee for education, Arne Duncan, who had absolutely no experience. And the furthest he got was a bachelor's in sociology. He happened to be a very well-connected person in Chicago, and that's what qualified him in the eyes of Barack Obama, apart from the fact that he played basketball with Obama, and that seemed to be the great qualification. So I'm asking, in as much as you are highlighting some of the abysmal aspects of this particular employee, I'm not an employee, this particular cabinet member, isn't it that he's perfectly compatible with the Trump administration?
I absolutely agree, and that's the problem, and this is why we have to work around what are the quote-unquote set rules. You know, I would encourage people who are retired to show up at their representative's office, because that is where impeachment starts, is in the House of Representatives. Even if you just have to stand outside their offices with a cup of coffee or tea or whatever, a bottle of water, make it known that this is unacceptable, because it starts at the top. This current president is showing that he's incompetent, and all his decisions thereby are incompetent.
Now, the question is, and because the I word is being used a lot more, we did a program on this, impeachment, is your view, for example, the idea that he's unfit, is that going to pass muster as a reason that we can't prove, or how do you prove he's unfit? By law, you know, so we'll do a program on this. This is very important, because we will find out that our version of what constitutes unfitness for occupying the office of the president may not be the same qualification as the law says. The law lays out for rules of impeachment.
Well, that's the rub, and the way I understand it, I've been studying this issue a little bit, and it relies on Congress, which obviously is Republican, both sides, Congress and the Senate and the House. However, they can deem him incompetent because they make the rules, just like the House makes their rules every session before they start, which is kind of strange, but that's how they do business. So they can figure out the problem, and then, in other words, they figure out the solution to the problem. Maybe I'm saying that backwards, but they're able to finagle the rules to make the law fit their rules, because it's subjective.
Okay. Well, we'll see, because the demand will have to come also from Congress as to what rules will apply in the event that the many people in Congress are pushing for impeachment, but on what grounds? And are these provable grounds, and will they stick according to the, quote, law? That's the question.
Right. Well, he has dementia. I mean, it's obvious now that he has dementia. I mean, he has delusions.
Now,
seriously.
We did say early, I must grant you, we did say early, I did say, that he's not well-centered. There's something wrong with the president. And I'm seeing more and more articles. They're not just poking fun or, you know, and being sarcastic, but they really are concerned about the mental health of the president. But still.
Exactly. You know, exactly. I have a degree in psychology, and that's the first thing you were taught is that you are not supposed to diagnose someone from afar. However, there are a group of reputable psychologists, I think maybe the APA, I think it's gone that high, that have signed a letter saying that he's unfit and dangerous for the country. So I think that there are a group of senators and representatives who are working on this now, and especially what happened today, where the fascist said that Comey better watch out because he would be on tape admitting to certain things. But so knowing that, I maintain it also at that point that this is doable. If the impeachment is doable, that would put under review all these incompetent people that he has nominated and that have gone through the Senate. Because just like yesterday at Hanford, now here we have Rick Perry, who he might look good on camera, but he didn't even know that the Department of Energy is in charge of all a nuclear arsenal. You see, now that's dangerous.
It isn't. Would you believe it? It isn't at all strange. You'd be surprised at how many administrations have been governed by the most incompetent, the most unsuitable people. And this is the dilemma that we have. We stuck with them because of the process. Trump himself would be number one. Is this guy the right guy to be president? But the rules say you run, you get the most votes, electoral votes, boom, you're the president. Now, you could be a screaming idiot, but the rules are he's president. He won.
True.
The rules, we had Hillary Clinton as a possible alternative. Imagine that.
She's trying to run again, and I will vomit. I will have projectile vomit if that woman runs again. Honest to God. Please, I hope to meet you for some red finger tea. I hope to meet you for some red finger tea. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Khalil, for your call. I certainly enjoyed hearing from you today. Okay, Henry from Chicago, what do you have to say?
Hey, Utrice, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
It's going good. Sunny day out here in Chicago, so very nice. Nice weather today. Want to say hello to you and the TRN audience and the Lead Stories listeners as well, and hope everybody has a good weekend. I want to make two points. Continuing the theme of booing at commencement ceremonies here here Chicago State University, a school that I had got my undergrad in. Had their commencement yesterday, and it was the guest speaker was none other than Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner, who got a chorus of boos when he spoke, because earlier in the year, Rauner was threatened to cut funds for Chicago State, which is a state-run university, and they didn't even know if they were going to open this year. So it's so ironic, you know, he becomes the, commencement speaker at Chicago State University, and the students responded accordingly to him. So he got a nice round of boos as well. Also, just to let you know, a couple of months ago, he appointed Paul Vallis on the university board. Now, for those who know, Paul Vallis was the CEO of Chicago Public Schools before Arne Duncan. And just like Arne Duncan, Paul Vallis closed many schools within CPS as well. So a lot of those characters are going around being recycled
thinking of that exact word. They get recycled.
Yes, they're being recycled. And I think he was also Vallis was also the superintendent of Philadelphia schools as well, where he closed a whole bunch of schools. So, yes, he's being recycled. I also want to give you an update on some of the things some of the grassroots organizations are doing here in Chicago. We are still working on I think I mentioned this before, Misha's Beauty Supply. It was the beauty supply chain that's owned by the woman who was attacked in North Carolina that was on video. We're trying to rally to have that closed down. We're still ongoing with that one. However, we have confirmation that business from people in the area, business has gone significantly down for them. And also, too, there was somebody had reported that at a local Target there, because Misha also has beauty products as well, those products have been removed from that Target because of the bad publicity that Misha's is getting. And one more thing, too. I mentioned about a month and a half ago about a liquor store that we were that we had shut down for a day over in one of the neighborhoods in Chicago that was basically selling expired food, spoiled food, and also from some people in the community, drugs and guns from some people who said they live in the community. But yesterday, one of the men that was with us basically took a picture and reported that the store is closed permanently, and it has a big sign by the city of Chicago saying that the business license has been revoked. So the store, the liquor store, is permanently shut down. I would like to thank and applaud the efforts of the men that came out that day and then actually continued to protest against the opening, you know, the continuing operation of that store. Now, one of the men also came up with a good idea about why don't we try to build a co-op with that, you know, with that land, see who, you know, and try to open up some sort of co-op where the community owns, you know, like a grocery store there. And I thought it was a great idea because, you know, even though it was a small victory, you know, the war still continues. So it's sort of like, you know, we have to plan ahead because, I mean, if we're gonna shut down these businesses that leech off of our people in the community, we have to have a viable alternative as well for them.
Yes, you do. And that's a good idea would be to spend some time thinking precisely that. Not rushing into something because it sounds good, but to carefully think about what that substitute would be and in what ways it could work to the benefit of the community. It's great to hear this update. I really am proud of you for taking the initiative. As I say, you be a leader.
And look, the only people that can save us is ourselves.
That's correct. Absolutely. Thanks. Such great news. And I really, really congratulate you and others who have joined together in doing something in a positive way for community benefit. Thank you so much. Eric from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hey, hello.
Hello.
Hey, Trees, how are you?
Okay. How are you doing, Eric?
Good, good. I wanted to make a comment about some of the stuff I've heard, you know, even on your show. I think a part of this situation is that we still believe in this system, regardless of how much they demonstrate that, you know, it's all just a charade. It's all just a joke. You know, this this whole idea of the Congress being the people who set any kind of rules, they've demonstrated time and time again that they have no interest in it and that they'll defer to whoever provides the most money. And we still believe that they're going to set any kind of rules. So those are the people we continue to turn to. You know, when you think about something absurd, like the judiciary, you know, basically stating that corporations are person, you know, personhood. And then you think about the banks and the criminality of the banks and what they did. And they got felony charges. You know, there were felony charges to the institution. It's as if, you know, you charge the felony to a house. You know, I'm in the house with the money, but you charge the house with the felony, and I get to walk out of the house with the money. You know, they demonstrate these absurdities so blatantly. And here are these institutions that were charged with felonies. They pay these mediocre fines, and they're all solvent, and they're doing wonderfully again with people that are making tons of money. And we're over here crying that we have all these problems, yet those are the same people that are coming out of our mouths to resolve the problem. They have to pass some kind of legislation, they have to make some kind of decision. Furthermore, all this talk that Donald Trump is insane, to me itself, I think is insane. Because this man managed to become president. what does that say about the rest of us who think that he's insane? You know, he's president, and what he says, if we would start listening a little bit more to, you know, the little tidbits that he drops here and there, besides all the nonsense that he spews, he said during the debate, I used to pay people like Hillary, you know, to do my bidding. And he asked people, what do you think campaign contributions are? We give them the money to run.
I mean, you're making very strong cases here. Nobody could argue the points, really, that you've made, except that I would point out that you have to see these things in their totality. By that I mean, when you look, when you say, for example, people need to pay attention to Donald Trump because he's pretty much saying some valid things and doing some valid things, well, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
That still does not negate the fact that there are major problems with this man that nobody wants to talk about. And they're the kinds of problems that have us in a position now. In under 100 days, he has managed to put the United States close to nuclear war. You know, so you balance that with a kind of semi-cogent position on something else. No, you can't say that because he took a semi-logical position on something else, that you negate the fact that his recklessness and his bizarre thinking and his authoritarian streak, we all are subject to the consequences and fallout of somebody who operates like that. That is not normal.
President Obama, upon leaving office, gave the military $1 trillion to modernize the nuclear arsenal. You know, he produced an era of droning galore.
Yeah.
You know,
no question.
He produced an era where you frack anywhere you want, you drill offshore anywhere you want. You know, they built the pipelines under President Obama. So my position is, the sense of newness is the problem, because it will have us returning to these same people for solutions that they will not produce.
At the same time, Obama was just stridently supported by liberals, by the pseudo-progressives, by the black community, and the Latino community, nobody's looking at what he was doing. They were just so thrilled that he was a handsome guy with straight teeth and a very nice guy.
Completely insane.
Who had us at war for all 8 years of his administration. So this is exactly my point. It is the momentum has to come from outside the circles of power. They have no interest at all. They have nothing to gain with reforms of any sort.
My only position is that they all have all of them. So we need to stop talking about Congress doing this or that. They won't. We need to stop talking about justice system doing this or that. They won't. And, you know, the voting has become a kind of, they like this talk of weaponized, you know. It's become weaponized against the people, because they will say to us, we're providing you with two obviously really bad options. If you don't choose one, you're not patriotic.
Okay, Eric, I'll challenge you now. I'll challenge you on this point.
Uh-huh.
And the point I'm going to challenge you on is, you have a clear picture. You have an absolutely clear picture, and it would be very hard to argue against the points that you've made today.
Okay.
The question is, where's the change coming from? And what is the change?
We have to change our minds first. The rhetoric is that we're not changing. If we stop voting, that's number one. If you stop voting for any one of these people You stop giving them the license that they keep returning to. This so-called system that they've completely sabotaged and done in, you know, if you stop voting, that's the first ticket, you know? Because
I think they will adjust very well to that. If people stop voting and voting decreases by 40, 50, 60%, it will still be a matter of who gets the most votes. They don't care. The question is, what is the system? And that's the word I talk about all the time. What is our counter system? We have nothing. Right now should be the perfect time.
Mm-hmm.
We should be seeing a political activity like we've never seen before. Trump is vulnerable. The Democrats are trying to pick up the pieces of what they used to be. And we have a total, it seems, a total void because the political entities that could enter the fray are either A, undesirable, or B, they're just too lazy. They're not acting like this is a priority at all to get out there and to proselytize and to build a political base. So that's the reality.
Yeah.
We talk, but who's building the counter systems? They're still playing by the same rules.
Well, I mean, my position is that we will continue to play by the same rules as long as it's their rules and we, you know, observe their rules. So if we start talking, at the very least, if we start talking about completely rejecting their rules, if you're looking for Congress to pass anything, it's not going to happen. It's clearly not going to happen. If you're looking for the justice system, and this is my point about the whole charging these houses, these institutions, and then absolving everybody within the institution. So why would you even think about the justice system as any kind of justice system?
But we've been stuck at this point for decades.
Yeah.
We're not making any great move towards something that is alternative and would work. That's my problem. All of the points that you've made, all of the points I've just made, we cannot deny the fact that these have been standing problems, and we haven't seen very much in the way of an alternative system, a practical approach that would work. And nobody is advancing it. We're still talking, but not doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. We have to have people. We just heard from Chicago. When people take the initiative, like Henry did and a group of people with him, they took action. They're getting results. That's just, people may say, well, it's a small thing. To me, it's a big thing because that's the essence of political change. People get up and they put their, you know, their hands to the plow and they get things done, no matter how small, no matter how big. The fact is that they're changing the dynamic and they're changing the political, social, and economic reality in a way that would benefit them. So that's what we have to start inculcating. We have to encourage people to be self-initiators of change. We keep waiting for people to make change. No, it doesn't work that way. We have to be self-initiators. But I appreciate your points. You made some solid points today. I agree with you. I don't disagree with you on any of the points that you made. But we have to get more involved in ways, you know, however you can get that done to make a change. And I thank you for calling in today. Great to hear from you. Jean from Maryland, you're on the air.
Reese. Hi, Reese.
Hello.
What a week. You know, there's so many things. What to talk about. What a week.
What a week.
So, you know, Eric just called, and I have just a brief point about him, but really I called to talk about Betsy DeVos. So your question to Eric was, what do you do? What's the next step? And the first time that I called into your show, I guess about a year or so ago now, I was talking to you about stopping shopping and stopping spending so much money. That's what we do. Keep your money in your pocket. Don't spend it. The things that you need to buy, buy used, buy recycled stuff. Don't buy new stuff anymore. I think that's the answer, because Eric is right. Voting is not going to help you. You're not going to change the position of the Congress. If President Trump could have gotten himself elected on hate rhetoric, then anything is going to happen. And it's money that's buying it. So I keep my money in my pocket. I'm not buying anything, nothing. So to move on to Secretary DeVos, I think that it's quite frightening to note how so many things are being forced upon us by this administration and Secretary DeVos and Jeff Sessions and others are examples of how the rule of law and common decency don't matter. And at the same time and in the same breath, I think we need to examine that President Obama in 8 years did nothing for historically black colleges, and that it just kind of follows suit that this administration is going to step it up a notch and work to close them. Now, as a graduate of a historically black college that is now closed, St. Paul's College, I am horrified that Secretary DeVos would go down to Bethune-Cookman and that their president would invite her. And I don't understand his strategy, because all of those graduates who are soon to become alumni will never write a check that school to support the school. So,
well, the thing is, don't give him too much credit. He didn't organize this. He just had to accept it. This was organized. I see the fine hand of Omarosa and other people. They organize these things to please their employers. You know, it's the same way she organized this photo op with Trump sitting in his Oval Office and surrounded by the HBCU presidents and so forth. I know how this works. They organize something that would suit them and whatever strategy that they want. They bring it to you, and of course the implication is, hey, we have Title IV money for you if you play ball. And then Edison Jackson says, wow, okay, I'll take it. Oh, but by the way, Betsy DeVos is going to come to your college and make the commencement speech. The same thing with Hillary Clinton. The president of the college didn't put this together. A package was put together, and he just had to sign on to it. That's all.
And I agree and with you on that, but the larger strategy that I think black colleges in particular struggle with is a question of enrollment. And when you have an instance like this, which comes up, now all of those graduates are going to go home, they're going to have children of their own, those children are going to grow up and wonder where to go to school. And you got to wonder, are there going to be recommendations to send your kid to your alma mater, where you graduated from? I'd really have to think twice about that. I don't see that happen.
Here's the thing.
If you can give me 1 year's worth, 3 years worth of Title IV money, okay, I'm happy to take that. But I really, really don't see the foresight coming from a university president who has to plan 10, 15 years into the future to do something like this and simply wreck the goodwill of an alumni of an entire class for a 40-minute speech from this woman.
I'll be very, very brutal here. I would say a large part of the problem is that the people who benefited from HBCU education abandoned responsibility for the future of the colleges and universities that they graduated from. They don't fund them. They don't participate in securing the futures of these colleges and universities. And the attitude is, well, I got mine, see ya, and they're done. They may get excited about a match or some kind of game coming up, and for, you know, nostalgia's sake, they will hearken back to the colleges and universities that they went to. But you don't see a consistent effort to fund your own institutions, and that's a problem. We do not do that.
I hear you, and I certainly recognize what you're saying. But the school that I graduated from was so small, and the size and the strength of the alumni was simply not enough to support the needs and requirements of the school.
Let me just say this, because we're running out of time.
Okay.
Mary McLeod Bethune baked cupcakes to build a university and went door to door selling them. We forget that. It doesn't matter how small. They started very, very small. When you are baking cupcakes to raise money so that people's children could be educated, that's real small. But she did it. We expect all these changes to happen, and we put in our own path all kinds of reasons as to why things can't be done. We abandoned, in large measure, I would say that, we abandoned our own institutions. We refused to fund our freedom, ourselves. That's our job. We shouldn't be looking to anybody to do anything. If they do something good, fantastic. But it is our job, bottom line. And in this regard, we have failed spectacularly. Not just the colleges and universities, but in other institutions that historically have stepped in to take care of the community. We just don't fund the NAACP. We have a lot of problems with that. But we don't fund it. They've become, you know, in a sense, dependent on the system that they're supposed to be fighting. So that is our charge. So we're out of time. That brings us to the end of the program. I just love this program. I just love us getting together to talk things through. I thank you for tuning in today and contributing so meaningfully to this discussion, and help the program grow. Tell people about it, and let us gather more and more to talk things through. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. You know you're going to learn something there. You can reach me at Lead Stories, L-E-I-D, Stories, one word, at gmail.com. A pleasure always, and a great privilege to be in your company. It's the weekend. Surround yourselves with people who bring positive dimension to your life. If not, put on your sneakers and run like hell from them. We'll see you on Monday. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.